Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Bet365 sponsors our podcast, and they feature over 300,000 sporting events on their betting app. It's got everything you need to bet on sport. Bet365 are offering a wide range of markets, including first, last, or anytime goal scorers. With over 45 million members, it's the world's favorite online betting company. With Bet365 Bet Builder, you can combine match results, players to score, number of goals, and more to create your own personalized bet. And if you can't watch the games live, with Bet365's Match Live feature, you can follow every moment through live graphics and text. Bet365 is the world's favorite online sports betting company. The app can be downloaded from the Google Play and the Apple App Store. Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. Hello, dear listener, and welcome to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne, and this is your go-to Newcastle United podcast. Prodcast. It started early. Brought to you by The Athletic. Welcome back. The three boys are back in town. We're reunited once again in the virtual studio, the isolation station. Put your hands together, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mr. George Corkin. How are you doing, George?
Well, if this is a podcast, do we do Catholic versions as well? I don't know.
Very good. I like that. And also George. Yeah. Oh, go on then.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not entirely sure how I feel. I feel confused, Taylor. I feel confused.
Oh, really? Why? Why is that?
Well, I think we'll probably talk about that, won't we?
All right.
I'm just not used to Newcastle behaving like a normal football club.
And also joining George, of course, welcoming him back to the podcast, is Mr. Chris Waffles Woff. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, the three of us together, the triumphant return. It's strange having the three. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a long time, but also at the same time, not long enough.
It's been frigging brilliant, let's be honest.
Oh, God. I have to say, I listened to that podcast when it was just the two of you and I was off on the poorly sickness. And, it was awful, wasn't it? It was really bad.
Well, Chris insisted on leading from the front. And he's one of life's, you know, he's one of life's straight men. It should have been me. I was the host with the most, surely.
No, it was great stuff. I enjoyed it a lot. It was really good fun. kept my spirits up, put it that way. So how are we all doing anyway? The world of Newcastle United is a strange and wonderful place. Well, maybe it's not wonderful, but it's a strange place. And there's lots been going on, hasn't there, this week? It seems like there's new news every day. There's stuff coming out of the club every 5 minutes at the minute. So what is going on, George?
Well, we're signing footballers. I mean, I don't know how to. I mean, I'm not
well,
quite sure.
I, for
what to
one,
make
of didn't
it.
See that coming.
No, I know. And I think it's all joking aside, it's been very good. Let's not, you know, ignore the fact that this probably comes from a very low base in terms of optimism this summer, because it's been a very difficult and long and wearing summer. But only a few days to go until the start of the season, they've lurched into action. And I think the sort of encouragement comes from the fact that they've not just signed bodies; they've signed people who will make them better, who have a track record, and that's been one of the sort of, sorry to use the word narrative, but it's one of the kind of narratives of this summer that Steve Bruce has been pushing for experience. His mantra has been no risks, no risk. The club simply cannot afford to take risks this season. We've got a truncated season coming up. We've got more games in a shorter period of time. We know what's happened or not happened over the course of the last few months. And he wanted people to be able to go into the team straight away and, theoretically at least, perform. And he's got his way. Now, the reasons for that and the reasoning behind that is kind of very, very interesting. It's fascinating. But at the time we're recording, Callum Wilson has signed from Bournemouth for £20 million. He's a 28-year-old, That's not Mike Ashley business.
It's not.
Ryan Fraser has also signed on a free transfer. His previous club were Bournemouth too. I think he's an upgrade. And Jamal Lewis is here having a medical. So it's, yeah, it's pretty staggering, really. But it's good news. And there hasn't been enough of that recently for us to be blasé about it.
There certainly hasn't. There's been a lot of information on The Athletic over the last couple of days about the potential incomings and what they bring. And of course, if you want to check all that out, get yourself on there, theathletic.com /Newcastle Pod for a 30-day free trial for all of the articles that are on there at the minute, and catch up with the latest news on Wilson, Fraser, Lewis et al. Chris, how are you feeling about it all? It's very strange, isn't it, feeling this positive?
It is very strange. I mean, I'm trying to get used to actually reporting on signings as well, because during my journalistic career, I haven't really done that yeah. much. And that's partly because of Newcastle, but also because it tends to be that I'm on holiday whenever Newcastle signs someone. It became a running joke when I was at the Chronicle, although it was just a fact. And actually, it nearly happened on this occasion because I was only back on Monday, but they did delay it long enough for me to be back. I think it's hard to really overstate how important Callum Wilson is as a signing. I think that it's just so far removed from everything that we've seen really under the Mike Ashley era. I mean, in this piece that I've done for The Athletic, I've gone through it and looked at the previous 12 permanent signings Newcastle have made for a fee, striker-wise. The average age is 24. Only two others have been from domestic clubs, and they were Daryl Murphy and Hosseluu. So Newcastle have signed an England international, albeit from someone who's been relegated. He's 28 years old. They've paid the second highest ever fee that they've paid for someone for him. And it's to try and fix a problem now, whereas in the past, for so long, they've been signing loan players to try and patch up positions, or they're signing players from abroad who clearly have potential, but they don't develop them in the right way. They haven't got the players there already to really help them through. And yeah. Callum Wilson is proven in the Premier League. Yes, he had a fairly average season last season, but that fairly average season would still have made him Newcastle United's top goalscorer with eight. So, so I just think that Wilson in particular is huge. The other business is very positive. Jamal Lewis, who should or could maybe confirm by the time this podcast is out, very highly rated. Obviously, Liverpool wanted him. Ryan Fraser on a free transfer, I think it's an absolute no-brainer. I mean, that's the one I'm slightly just a little bit in terms of attitude and what's happened over the last year. I think he's got a big point to prove, and I think that he needs to really knuckle down and impress. But all those three probably do walk straight into the first 11. So Newcastle haven't just signed players. As George said, Bruce promised that he was going to sign quality, and these three players will probably go straight into the first 11. And in that sense, he has delivered, and he's managed to get Mike Ashley to sanction this for whatever reason. It's unclear, and there's always with Newcastle there's always that but as to what does this mean, what is that going to affect. But in the short term, this seems a positive move, and Newcastle actually go into the start of the season with a little bit of positive momentum around the club, even given everything that's gone on.
The thing with Wilson, you make a great point. I mean, if you go back 12 months or a bit more than that, you know, it's not about, even when kind of Newcastle have shown ambition in the past, it's kind of been skewed. So, you know, bloody hell, they spent £40 million on a footballer. That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
But it was also extraordinary that they spent it on a bloke who was absolutely ill-suited to the system that they had at the time, and they kind of expected him to take him out of a team and for him to be able to do the same thing in a completely different circumstances. You know, I do have sympathy for Gillinton. A year previous to that, they signed Rondon, but on loan, when Benitez wanted him as a permanent signing. He was the same age as Callum Wilson is now. He would have been available for £16 million, whatever it was, and they wouldn't do it. You know, they would not do that. Now, the argument that we have talked about on here plenty of times is that thing where if you're buying someone who's at their peak, fine, at the end of a 5-year contract, now Wilson's got a 4-year contract with an option for a fifth, I think, you know, there won't be a sell-on value. You know, he won't be worth a lot of money. But in that time, his experience, this is the theory, his experience would have become useful for other players. The younger players in the team will come on. He'll help make them worth more money. The team will improve. The team will have, you know, and it's that sort of philosophy that Ashley's Newcastle has just never kind of bought into, you know. And so that's why it's kind of staggering. And it's not about, you know, it's not about saying sort of domestic-based players or players who are in the Premier League are kind of better than signings that you can make from abroad, people that you haven't heard of. I don't think in this instance it's about a kind of lack of imagination. I think this is just about good sense. It's exactly what the team needs, and that's why it's quite difficult to get your head around.
It's what the club's needed for a few years now, isn't it? We've needed this kind of player, this signing for a while. He'll bring in goals, he'll bring in energy, he'll bring in experience as well. He's a fantastic player all round, and I think it's the sort of signing that we've needed for a long, long time. I am really excited about him linking up with Ryan Fraser, though, because they have a fantastic partnership and a great combination. They're actually responsible for the highest number of goals from a partnership since Chris Sutton and Alan Shearer in the Premier League, which is a remarkable stat when you look at those two guys. But I think hopefully they're going to be great. And Jamal Lewis coming in as well, a young player with lots of potential, but has already played in the Premier League for a season and proven himself to be a very decent calibre, especially when you look at the clubs who were sniffing around him. And I think it's good business. I think it's great business. But what I think it is I think it's what was required, isn't it? Let's be honest. Let's not pretend that this is fairy tale land here. This is what we needed desperately.
Oh, big time.
And I agree with you. And I think there's been sort of split on social media. I think the majority seem to have been quite enthused by the business over the last few days. And then there's a counterpoint, which I also understand, is that, well, why should we be celebrating this? This should be expected. But the fact is that it hasn't been what's happened over the last however long. And so this is so far removed. And although it is still a little microcosm, a little micro section within the whole of the sort of omni shambles that has been Newcastle United over however long the period of time. This is in this moment in time, there is something finally to be a little bit positive about after all of the frustrations and exasperations of the last 6 months and obviously beyond with the whole Mike Ashley era, but particularly the takeover saga. And so Newcastle desperately did need this, but also it's not that they desperately needed this and then they've just signed some players who they're thinking, that might work out. In theory, and no, but nothing is a certainty, but in theory, those three players, as I said before, are coming into the team and they are going to improve the team. And so Newcastle are stronger now than they were towards the end of last season. They're not all necessarily like for the three loan signings who left at the end of last season, but I'd say that they're probably better players all round, and they're not like for like position wise. But if you swap three then for the three now, I think you'd say Newcastle are in a far stronger position.
The bigger picture, of course, as Chris points to, is that a couple of months ago, maybe a bit longer, you know, Newcastle fans were fantasising about Gareth Bale joining them or Neymar joining them. I mean, that was never realistic, but that was the conversation that was being had. Everybody was playing fantasy football. One of the interesting things, now people might not believe this, but I can swear, I swear that it's true, both Callum Wilson and Fraser were on the prospective owners' list for new signings. They may not have been top of the list, but they were on it. May not have been on the first list even, but they were on the list. And of course, you know, transfer targets are a movable feast because once the transfer window opens, all those, you know, players move and all that kind of stuff. So it's not far beyond what Newcastle might have had in any case. I mean, they were also interested. I wrote a piece for The Athletic that went up on Saturday in which I talked about this philosophy of no risk. And I mentioned, you know, a couple of players that the consortium had been interested in who ended up going to Man City and Arsenal and things like that. So they were, it's not to say that they would have got them, of course, but they were looking at players like that. But these, you know, these players, they're good players. And there is, as Chris says, the idea is they come into the team and they improve it straight away. Mm. And honestly, that is so important this season. It's important with the way last season ended. It's important because of what's been happening over the summer. It's important because of the season that's to come. And again, I don't expect people to get misty-eyed about Steve Bruce. You know, he's someone that we've talked a lot about, obviously, on the podcast. I've done an interview with him, which should be available to read when the pod comes out. And what I wanted to talk to him about was people who've influenced him over the course of his life and career. And so we've done that. We've kind of picked out five or six sort of people, going all the way back to his school teachers at Benfield Comp, to people at Walls End Boys Club, etc., etc. And the thing that shone through, going all the way up to Sir Alex Ferguson, as you'd imagine, the thing that kind of really struck me was that he's had to prove himself from day one. He was this scrawny little kid underdeveloped, as he puts it, who wouldn't take his underpants off in the shower when he was 13, 14, because he was such a little kid, who's fought for everything. And the thing that I kind of found interesting about this was that, you know, he then went on, you know, he thought he wasn't going to get a league club. He finally did at Gillingham. He was there for 7 years in the third division, then gets to Norwich, has to do it all over again. He was the unfittest player there, had to do it again. Goes to Man United. Ferguson tells him, "You think you're fucking Franz Beckenbauer, son, and you are not Franz Beckenbauer." And he's had to do it again. And at the end of his playing career, he was captain of arguably the biggest club in the world. He's won trophies galore, and it's difficult to sort of think of him in those terms. But he's doing now what he's had to do all the way through his career. He's trying to prove himself. And basically, I said to him, actually, what we've talked about here really is Newcastle, but just in a different way. And he kind of went on this big, long thing about all the, you know, what he's trying to do here. And he's just going to try. He is going to try. People might not like him. And he says, "I understand totally when people point to the manager that came before and point to me and say, come on, you know," he understands that. But what's he supposed to do about that? And all I'd say is what's happened this summer shows that he has won an argument. Maybe that's all it is, but he has won an argument. And the players that he's got are his players.
Absolutely. I mean, those players coming in are not the types of players that I think Newcastle fans were expecting to come in, were they? I mean, looking back over the last few transfer windows, like Chris said, it's not exactly typical business for us, isn't it? Which is why I think there has been such a surprise and such excitement of these transfers coming in. Chris, would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, that is what is so different about it. Yeah, I haven't had an issue with part of the overarching blueprint under Mike Ashley. In theory, Rafa Benitez didn't, and I don't think that Steve Bruce did. But the problem that I've always had with it is that to really improve these players that you bring in who are young and inexperienced, is you do need a sprinkling of experience in there now and again, because they're not signing the absolute best young players in Europe, because they're not competing in that league. So therefore, they aren't signing the likes of the sort of players who Chelsea are signing at the minute. They're not signing Jadon Sancho. These are very talented young players, some of the ones they've brought in over the last few years, but they're ones who still need to be moulded in a certain way. Even Alan Saint-Maximin, when he came in last summer, there was still doubts over him, and I suppose you could argue there's still a lot of doubts over him, but that one has worked out, but a lot of them haven't. And so bringing these experienced players, and Callum Wilson is the centre-forward they need. He's the player they need in the situation they're in now. And look, it may not turn out for the best, and in some ways, if we end up that Mike Ashley stays at Newcastle United long term, then we may look at this window as the one where it finally killed off any chance of these transfers happening again if Callum Wilson doesn't work out. But they've given it a go, and he has been backed in that sense. And just speaking about fans, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, George asked me to put out a poll for a piece about hope that he's writing. So each of the individual club writers, Newcastle fans, asked them, how optimistic or pessimistic are you feeling about where Newcastle will finish this season? And we had 6,027 responses then, and 92% of them were either struggle but survive or big trouble. 6% said mid-table, 2% said top 10. Now, I've put out a poll this morning, which has had so far 5,259 votes, exactly the same question, exactly the same responses, and now there are only 50% in that bottom category, only 6% in big trouble, 44% say struggle but survive, 42% mid-table, and 7% top 10. So it just shows that the transformative effect that transfers can have on the mood, at least in the short term, and that people suddenly feel a little bit more optimistic. Now, come 5
mid-table, come on, come on, mid-table, your beauty, come on, fuck, come on, mid-table. 11th, come on, yes! Yes!
Book that open top bus for the lads.
Come on!
The fight for 10th place. Wow, get in. It's interesting though, isn't it? I read a thing the other day, somebody was mentioning about football fans and the way they view transfers as being almost like a collection, like a sticker book, to say, oh, I've got that one now, oh, I've got that one now. And it's quite an interesting theory, you know, it's less about the football club itself and more about the name that you can stick into your team's book, you know. It's a strange one, but I do think that the Callum Wilson, actually Ryan Fraser's the one that I'm slightly more excited about, because I've watched him over the last few years, and I do think he's a sparky little player. I think he's got something about him, and he's not as much of an angry wee bastard as Matt Ritchie is or was, but I think there's something about Ryan Fraser there, which is going to fit nicely. And I think Newcastle fans are going to like him a lot.
Well, I think you make a great point when you talked earlier about the partnership that they've already had.
Absolutely.
So in other words, I mean, it's a good thing too, because, you know, the first game's a couple of days away now, but you know, actually having a ready-made partnership to come together, people who know each other. And again, you know, you run the risk of harking back and all that kind of stuff, but you go back to the season before last, when the season ended with Rondon in the middle, Almiron and Perez, and you just had those little, you had that triangle, and it worked.
Balance,
you know,
wasn't it?
It worked, and it worked really well, and it was balanced. And, you know, we'll have to see whether this works in the same way. You just never know how people will gel, but you've already got one bit of it there that works. And what I like about Wilson is, you know, that he's a centre forward. You know, he's not going to plunder as many goals as Alan Shearer did in his time, but he can hold the ball up. He can help the players who specialise in getting up the pitch for Newcastle, and they've just not had that. They've not had a centre forward. Okay, fine. Gale came into the team towards the end of the season, and you know, you saw Newcastle improve just for having a proper striker on the pitch. But they've got someone who's whole point is to operate like that. He will help the team. He will give the team time. He will help the team get up the pitch, and then at the end of it, he should be there to put the ball away. So the front end of the pitch looks stronger already, and
absolutely,
I'm quite excited about that.
I'll tell you what else he is, Callum Wilson. He's a big, handsome brute, isn't he? Well, my word, when those photos came out yesterday, I had to go and open some windows in the flat. Oh, my God, what a champion-looking lad he is.
Yeah, nice to have a bit of eye candy.
Yeah, him and Fabian Shaw around a big market. Imagine, oh, my God.
Oof, damn, me.
Wet floor signs everywhere. Anyway, this podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the expert in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineering tools for your family jewels. And Manscaped has just launched in the UK. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job, so you can be one of the first men in the country to experience Manscaped's life-changing products. Their third-generation trimmer...
Is it a chainsaw?
Can I get on with the script, please, George, before we start jumping in? Their third-generation hedge trimmer, features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. And the water-resistant technology allows you to groom whilst in the shower or in the bath, talking to Steve Bruce. We've got a special offer for you right now, listening to this podcast. Get 20% off and free shipping by using the code EPL20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping and Manscaped by using the code EPL20. Happy shaving. And I hope that is the only 20% off. George, are you going to get one of those?
Hashtag knee pubes.
Knee pubes.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's the future, this, isn't it? This is the future.
This is what all the lads are doing.
Specialist equipment to get rid of the old pubes. I'd like to know where Chris stands on this subject.
How do you mean by where I stand?
Very far away, I'd imagine. With his hands over his eyes.
I'm not talking about your sack-shaving stance. Oh, look, that was quite a good alliteration. I'm not talking about your sack-shaving stance. I'm talking about where you stand on the whole idea of male grooming.
Each to their own. I think it's some more natural, some, you know, people
nicely
prefer
dodged. You're quite uncomfortable. You're quite uncomfortable nicely talking about dodged. Stuff like this, aren't you, Chris?
Yeah.
For a man so ready to talk about meat, he doesn't want to talk about his meat.
No. I think it's important. I mean, so my personal philosophy on this is to be streamlined for the summer. I like to be streamlined for the summer, and I like to grow a full all over body pelt for the winter. I think this is, you know, prehistoric man kicking in. It's those old instincts. But I want to be one giant ball of hair in the cold winter months. And then when summer comes along, I want to be streamlined so I can catch that gazelle. And nothing is going to interfere with your catching of that gazelle with hairy balls getting caught on brambles and stuff like that. So that's that's very much my... Whatever, that's my... So I'm all in favour of manscaping, and I will be signing up for that.
So we're joined by Pete Rutzler, who's the Athletics. Well, you're currently covering Fulham, is that right? But you were covering Bournemouth last year, Pete, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, that's right. I covered Bournemouth last season.
So you've got a lot of experience of Wilson and Fraser and their exploits on the South Coast.
Well, I do. I mean, last season's exploits weren't as exciting as 18-19, but yes, I'm certainly clued up on what they can do at their peak.
So what have Newcastle got with these two signings then? What have they brought in?
Well, the fact you signed both is really quite exciting, actually. The way they play together, their understanding, the number of goals they created for each other made them such a threat for Bournemouth. And I think the absence of that link and that connection last year really did affect the team and really did contribute to their struggles in the attacking third, which, you know, were Bournemouth's main problems. And I think from Fraser's side, his contract situation really did seem to affect him. We didn't see the same player, but that said, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in a bit, but he was still Bournemouth's most creative player, despite all of that. And Callum Wilson was essentially deprived of the same service that he'd had the year before. So from that side of it, it wasn't as exciting last year, but, you know, when they are on song, when they are playing together and in tandem and so effective in transition on the break, they are a real weapon. And the fact that Newcastle have recruited both of them is a real boost. And it'd be good to see if Fraser can hit those high levels again and how much that can boost Callum Wilson.
Absolutely. Newcastle were playing on the break quite a lot last season, sitting deep and then trying to explode out of the blocks. Do you think Fraser and Wilson are going to fit into that mould, are going to fit in nicely with those players around them, the likes of Almiron and Sam Maximan as well?
Yeah, I think it's actually a very exciting attacking lineup. And I think Fraser sort of came into his own when Bournemouth started to play on the counter-attack a little bit more. You know, he'd been at the club for 7 years, but it was that year, 2018-19, and the season before, where Bournemouth were just sort of transitioning from a proactive, possession-based team to one that preferred to hit teams on the break and sit a little bit deeper. It sort of unravelled last year with the lack of their attacking threat at all, but he certainly is excellent at breaking at pace. Callum Wilson as well loves to be on the last defender. Very clever movement, and can sniff out a goal. So in terms of how they'll fit in at Newcastle, they're ideal recruits to play alongside the likes of Almiron and Sam Maximan and dovetail with those players.
Fantastic. And as far as injuries go and stuff like that, are either of these players prone to injury? Or I know Callum Wilson's had a couple of problems in the past with his knees and stuff like that, but is this something that you could see being a problem? Newcastle are really good for injuries. We always seem to have a really bad spell in the season where we lose a lot of players. Do you think these guys are going to be okay?
Yeah, you'd hope so. I don't think they've had any significant issues recently. I think Fraser's always had sort of a clean bill of health, so I can't imagine there being an issue there. I think for him it's more a case of trying to get him back up to those levels, and that'll be the challenge for Steve Bruce. Can he get the most out of him? And really, you know, I think the fact that he will be now focused on his football, he won't have any off-field distractions. You know, he changed his agent midway through the season, and, you know, he wanted a move. He wanted that ideally to a top six club, but with his form, it's, you know, that was never really likely to happen. There was never a bid last summer for that. So that should bode well. With Callum, he was really, really unlucky. He suffered two serious ACL injuries to both of his knees once Bournemouth had won promotion. You know, he was so important to that promotion campaign, was on the verge of that first England call-up. And then he suffered his first injury at Stoke, and then he suffered another one to his opposite knee. And what has been so remarkable about Callum is the fact that he's been able to come back from that. You know, there was a time where you could suffer an ACL injury and it would, you know, be, you know, that'd be detrimental, sometimes terminal to your career. And not, certainly for a player who's trying to get into the England squad and becoming a key player in that sense. But, you know, he bounced back even after a second one, which is, you know, even more extraordinary, really. It's taken a lot of hard work. He's put in a lot of hard yards to get himself back fit, and, you know, he's gone from strength to strength. And then after he came back, he battled back into England contention, scored his first England goal, became the first active Bournemouth player to score for England, and in that sense he hasn't had any issues since. And because he's such a professional and because he looks after himself so well, I don't think you'll have too many issues in that regard, as long as he's looked after properly.
Yeah, and with regards to how they've left Bournemouth, I know that
Callum Wilson seems to be going with all of Bournemouth's well wishes, whereas Ryan Fraser, we haven't heard so much about that, and obviously he's left under a bit of a cloud. Is there a story there? Is there something going on?
Yes, there's definitely an interesting contrast between the two in how they've left Bournemouth. You know, they've both been at the club, they've both been long-term servants to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Fraser joined when they were in League One, so he's, you know, he's, he was sort of the epitome of the Eddie Howe rise in a sense, you know, coming from that stage, being nurtured through, he had a loan spell at Ipswich, and then really reaching such extraordinary heights in the Premier League, higher than, you know, pretty much any of Bournemouth's players in their history, really. And then, of course, the way last season panned out, the fact that he gave an interview in January where he said he hadn't really been trying for the team, which naturally went down very badly. He is a very honest character and can sometimes say a little bit too much. But then it was only compounded when, of course, it's, you know, the lockdown and the extended season and the challenge that posed any player whose contract is running down. It makes it so, so hard. And you don't really envy him in that situation. But, you know, he said in that interview that he would give everything to the team to help them stay up. But then he walked away before the final nine games of the season. And as I've mentioned before, he was so important, even with his form not being at the same level. He was still their most creative player and they definitely missed him. You know, he's so important from set pieces and Bournemouth scored so many goals from set plays. But the fact that he did walk away, you know, really left a sour taste in Bournemouth fans' mouths. And he's, you know, it's actually quite sad, really, how it sort of tarnished his legacy a little bit down on the South Coast. So, yeah, he won't be as fondly remembered as perhaps he could have been.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say. But Callum Wilson, you know, is... You know, the fans are really grateful for his contribution to the club's rise, to the club's story, to promotion and staying with the club. You know, he's an England player as well. And he's grateful the other way because of the support they've shown him through his injuries. So, two very contrasting exits, I think.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Pete, and talking to us. That's fantastic. Lots of great information there about Newcastle's two new signings. Thank you again for joining us.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Harry's sponsors, Pod on the Tyne. As a listener to the podcast, you can start shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. Support our podcast and get your set delivered to you, including a razor handle, 5 blade cartridge, foaming shave gel and travel blade cover. And going to harrys.com, Pod on the Tyne. Right now, we'll get you that trial pack. That's harrys.com/Pod on the Tyne. How come I have to read these all the time? Why can't we get George to do one of these sometime? George, you're the one who's used these Harry's razors.
My cheeks have never been smoother. I can do that. Wonderful. If you want me to do that, I'll just clip that. Here we go. Harry's razors. My cheeks have never been smoother.
So there we go. That was Pete Rutzler, the Athletic's Bournemouth correspondent from last year, now covering Fulham with lots of lovely information about Ryan Fraser and Callum Wilson. One person who's been involved in Wilson's decision to come to the North East was the mighty Alan Shearer. He's been texting him and talking up the club and the city and stuff like that, and he's been giving him some information about the team. Isn't that right, Chris?
He has, yeah. I mean, Bruce spoke a lot to Wilson as well, and I think he sort of sold him the vision of you come to Newcastle, you lead the line, you score goals here, and you can become a hero. And he also had that conversation. Yes, well, he had the conversation of the legend among all legends on Tyneside, obviously, in Alan Shearer, who first texted Wilson a few years ago. I think it was about 2015 when he did his first ACL injury, and Shearer does this, I think, fairly often with players who have serious injuries. He messages them just to give them sort of a bit of support, because he obviously had serious injuries himself to his knee and his ankles during his career, and he knows how low that can feel. And so him and Wilson have texted intermittently since. I think when he got in the England squad, he messaged him. But then over the weekend, particularly as he was flying up in Mike Ashley's helicopter, but also even before that, and subsequently, he was basically asking Shearer about the city and got very positive reports on the city and the club. Shearer said to him, yeah, come here, work hard, score goals and love the club as much as just show that you love the club as much as the fans do, and you will be accepted and adored. And I think that meant a lot to him to hear that from Shearer, and it's exactly how he wants to feel, I think, coming here. That's how centre forwards like to feel. They want to be the main man. They want that sort of glory, and hearing it from Alan Shearer himself must have been very special for him.
Fantastic. George, you've been speaking to Alan Shearer recently, haven't you?
Well, indeed, yes. So one of the things we've been doing at The Athletic over the course of the summer is our Premier League 60 list, which is, in our opinion, the 60 top players to have played in the Premier League, which, of course, is a bit of an artificial sort of invention, but it's certainly got people talking. And I kicked off the series with a piece on Les Ferdinand, who was number 60, and we've got to number 2 in the list. In fact, I think when the pod's out, it'll be up to number 1. Anyway, number 2 in the list was a certain Alan Shearer. And I have to say that although we all, every writer got a vote in terms of our top players, but we did not, only a few people got a say in which position. They locked themselves in a room and discussed it and came up with Shearer as number 2. And quite frankly, those people should be frigging ashamed of themselves. This should be a sackable offence.
But
all joking aside, it's one of those great kind of debating points. I thought I'd start off this piece with a quote from Alan Shearer from back in the day when he was a player. And he very famously said, "First is first. That's the way I was brought up. Second and third are nowhere." And I was the bloke who had the joy of ringing up Alan Shearer to tell him that he'd come second. Now, anyway, it's fine. He took that in good part, and then we discussed his history of kind of coming second, and because there was a bit too much of that for our liking at Newcastle, second in the league in his first season, and then obviously a couple of cup finals too, when sadly we were on the wrong end of results. But he did also come first at Blackburn, and there was that incredible sequence of seasons when he scored, 31 league goals in consecutive seasons, and Blackburn, who's just come up from the Championship, finished fourth, second, and then first. But anyway, so as part of this, I did ask him whether he should have won more trophies over the course of his career, and he gave what I thought was a very, very nice answer, which we can listen to now.
Would it change anything? Well, I mean, no, I was always happy with the decision I made to go into Southampton because it worked unbelievably well. I had a great start and great learning curve and all of that. I went to Blackburn because of Kenny, Ray and Jack, and they said they were going to win the league, and they won it within 4 years, which was, a phenomenal achievement to come in and take the big boys on. I mean, to put it into context, it's like, who won the league this year? Leeds. It's like Leeds coming in and within 4 years winning the Premier League.
Yeah.
I mean, and probably Blackburn aren't a bigger club as Leeds. So for Kenny to do what he did at Blackburn was a phenomenal achievement. I mean, we finished first 3 years, we finished fourth, second and won it.
Yeah.
Which was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's all right saying, well, old Jack had the money, but you try and get players to Blackburn or to teams that are promoted nowadays, it would be virtually impossible. So, and then I had my dream at Newcastle. I wore the 9 and scored goals and got the record and statue. And so, I mean, how could I ever regret that?
Well, there you go. No regrets, it seems.
Well, no, I mean, and, you know, there is that sort of strange thing. I mean, he says he acknowledges he would have won a lot of stuff if he'd gone to Man United. And, I mean, one of the other things I kind of looked at, I went back to his really pretty terrible autobiography, which he wrote in 1998, which was called My Story So Far. Nice one with the imagination there, Alan. But, and he talked about, obviously, you know, he could have played alongside Cantona, Giggs, Keane at Old Trafford. Amazing. Yeah. And he spoke to Ferguson, and the first thing he did after that was go house hunting. And, you know, he'd had an offer from Everton, and there was a late approach from Liverpool, and that was, you know, that was something that was in his mind. Arsenal, he says that Bruce Rioch had saved up all his transfer funds to sign him for Arsenal. And, by the way, he then throws in, Juventus, Inter Milan and Barcelona, three of the biggest clubs in the world. And then, after all of that, Blackburn offer him the position of player manager. He was 25. He was 25 years old.
Yeah.
And the kind of beautiful thing about that is that he then speaks to Kevin Keegan and Shearer comes home. And so he turned down all those clubs to come home. And obviously at the time, he, you know, Newcastle had just finished second when they should have finished first to Man U. And he did it because he thought there was going to be a great chance to win something. He was a world record signing, let's not forget. And it was that incredible sort of statement of intent. But sadly, in terms of winning something, it never quite happened. But my God, how privileged were we to have him, and how privileged were we to watch him? A man who had absolutely everything as a player, who won games, who saved games, who was often the best defender on the pitch, let alone the best attacker. You know, I love him. Absolutely. I love him as a fella.
I remember watching him score his first goal for Newcastle against Wimbledon at St James's Park. I wasn't actually in the ground. I was outside the ground looking through the barriers at the back of St James's Park, because at the time I couldn't afford a ticket to get in, and it was me and my best mate Steve. We were stood looking through the gate, and if you looked through the gate, you could see about two-thirds of the pitch. And then if you looked in the reflection of the boxes in the east stand, you could see the rest of the pitch. So you could kind of watch the game. And we watched... We watched that game, and I believe we were 1-0 up, and Alan Shearer had a couple of free kicks, had a couple of free kicks that didn't hit the mark, and then Shearer stepped up in the last couple of minutes. But just before we got that free kick, one of the stewards said, "Here, lads, come in, just quickly come in here." And we went inside this door, and we watched on the screen in the concourse as Alan Shearer floated that free kick into the top top left corner past Neil Sullivan, and all hell broke loose. And it's a memory that I've got, which is not a football memory really, because I wasn't at the game, but I was in the stadium. It's so bizarre, but I'll never ever forget that moment for the rest of my life. It was amazing. Absolutely incredible moment.
Well, the amount that he had throughout his entire career, it's just, I mean, the 201st goal, that moment was incredible. To finish his career scoring against Sunderland as well. I know that he wouldn't have wanted to finish an injury, but basically his last kick of a football was to score a penalty at the arch rivals of Newcastle United, of the club he supported as a boy. Then Les Ferdinand winning that penalty, definite penalty in the testimonial as well.
Absolutely, Stonewall. nothing weird about that one, was there?
but there's on that piece in The Athletic, there, I'd linked, there's a kind of Sky Sports YouTube link, and it has got his best goals on, both for Newcastle and Blackburn, and they are astonishing. I mean, he scored all of those goals. He scored so many goals, and so, you know, he scored all types of goals, but he wasn't a goal poacher. He scored some astonishing goals. Of course, took loads of penalties, but then that's an art in itself. He could score from free kicks. The goals he scored from outside the box, you know, it just... The power. There's this great quote, which I've mentioned before, actually, when I've written about him in the past. But there's this great quote from Alex Ferguson, who said he hit it as if he meant to kill it, and that's what Shearer did with the football. It was just that absolute power that he struck the ball, and he could volley it. He could use both feet. He was good in the air. And then, you know, later on, I mean, he was a master at buying his team time.
Yeah,
and you know. Winning those free quick kicks on the halfway line, you know, the ball would be coming up to him. He'd get a nudge off a defender and he'd go down and he'd win free kicks. There was no one better at winning free kicks. And, you know, that's an art form. And then, you know, for too much of his time at Newcastle, the club wasn't necessarily a happy place. Seeing him in the corner, shielding the ball, he could so good at doing that, sticking his backside out. He was so very, very good at that. Now, in this list, in the top 10, you know, you've got people like Giggs. I won't mention who's won it, just in case anyone's not seen it yet. But, you know, you've got players like Giggs and Keane, and you've got players who've, like, won absolutely everything. I sort of think it's actually such a compliment to Shearer to be number two on that list, because he scored all those goals in a team, well, not all of them, because there was that incredible patch at Blackburn, but he scored all of those goals for teams that, you know, only won one trophy. I mean, so when you actually think of it, for him to be where he is on that list is all the more astonishing.
It's an incredible achievement, isn't it?
Because he wasn't surrounded by people who were winning trophies every year.
Well, of course, you can read that Premier League 60 article by George about Alan Shearer on www.theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. If you follow that link, you can take advantage of a 30-day free trial for The Athletic and look at all the other lovely football content that's on there at the moment. As we hurtle towards a new Premier League season, Newcastle have signed a few players. Things are looking slightly brighter. Who knows? Could it be the year when we break into the top 10 and attack ninth place? Oh my God, who knows? What could happen possibly? Lads, thank you very much for joining us. It's been fun. Thanks a lot for Pete Rutzler for coming on and giving us a little bit of info about Callum Wilson and Ryan Fraser as well. And we shall speak to you all very soon on the other side. Take care of yourselves. Look after each other. Bye-bye.